Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello.
Hello. What's
it's up? Me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like to meet.
No.
My usual answer on Tinder. So, just like, hello, everybody.
What's up?
Welcome back to another episode, another week. We are up to episode 25.
What?
Is that a silver or a diamond in some people's marriage?
Silver.
Is that the silver?
Silver.
Well, we are up to our silver episode. 25. That's half a year of episodes, basically.
Yeah, pretty almost.
My goodness. Yeah, because we've been going since April. So yeah. And it's now September, so that's basically 6 months.
Almost, yeah.
That's crazy. Ooh.
We've been busy.
We have done very very well. Well, my name is Josh Devetta. We've got Asabi Goodman.
What's up, peeps?
And Gracie Mack.
Hello.
And this week's themed episode is disco.
Disco. Okay.
Beautiful.
So not a disco. Yeah.
But we can talk about this song later. I might have a little mention about actually.
Now, have we ever had an episode where we didn't talk about Mariah Carey?
I didn't think, you know.
Sex episode, but that's because you weren't
here. That's because I wasn't here, but I'm pretty sure.
We played the riff, though. Yeah. That's true.
That's very, very true. My present was still here. But, but yeah, we're talking about disco. And you know what? I love disco.
Just, me too.
Same.
I just think it's like one of the best genres ever. And you know, it started out as a subculture. You know,
yes.
It was very underground, and then it started rising in its popularity because, you know, corporate America was getting bored, and they wanted to go and
get down and dirty
at Studio 54, and you know, and nightclubs were becoming the promiscuous, you know, the promiscuous place to go if you wanted to have a lover. For the night,
ooh.
You better head to the disco because that's where you're going to find Josh Devetta. No, just
whoa, sweetheart, you're not
that old. I'm not that old at all. And just a really, and also really, really instrumental in LGBT culture as well, because the disco, the club. Was the institute for a very, very long time when, you know, when the gays and the everyone else were getting kicked out of their homes or being left on the street, the disco was the place to go because you could escape, feel real good about yourself. And just, and I love that the music industry went with the times with this one and went, you know what, the club is where it's at.
Yes.
And a lot of the art, you know, and a lot of the huge artists they had on their roster, they were becoming disco queens because of it as well.
Yeah.
Is this something you want to say, Asabi?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've only just briefly started, but I lived through the end of disco. And I was very young, but I was a huge fan of disco, and I never quite understood why it came to an end. But there was a thing called the Disco Demolition Night on July 12th, 1979. It was promoted by Major League Baseball, which is huge.
Lots of money.
Right? Yeah, lots of money. And they were basically just wanting to get more bums on seats.
Mm.
So what better way than to promote with hate? Right. So they ran a disco demolition night where anybody who had a disco record and was willing to donate it could get in for 98 cents. So
that's
they
crazy.
Thought that they might be able to get 20,000 people, which was 5,000 more than what they normally had for their crowd. They got 50,000 people. Now, this night was sort of spearheaded by a DJ by the name of Steve Dahl. And he had a bone to pick with disco, right? So back in the mid to late 70s, disco was becoming huge, like just massive. And so a number of radio stations started switching their format from rock to disco because it was more popular. It was just the popular music
of the
time.
People wanted to dance.
Yeah, people wanted to dance. People wanted to feel good. And Steve lost his job because of this, because he didn't like disco. So I assume he refused to play disco music. So he lost his job at the radio station because they had switched formats. He was a rock DJ. They wanted disco. Boom. So he loses his job.
He still wanted to play the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, well, yeah. And not that the Rolling Stones are bad, some of them. But anyway, so Steve, in his anger, I guess, decided that, you know, we need to get rid of disco. What's the best way to do it? And so he created this Disco Sucks campaign. And I mean, and he was known as a radio shock jock, so he probably should have been fired anyway. So he created this campaign and got in bed with Major League Baseball. They created the Disco Demolition Night, and people were donating their disco albums. So they'd already paid for it. Thank you. So the money still went to the artist. But what was going to happen was, in the middle of the game, Steve, with all these albums, they were putting them all into a box, and he was going to blow them up on the field.
Jesus.
And yeah, right. Very, I mean, it's
going to clean that shit up.
It's pretty, like, this is the microaggressions of all microaggressions, right? Like, he was just mad. And so he did that. And they sort of accredit this with the ending of the disco era. I mean, it was quite violent. It turned into a bit of a riot. They destroyed the field to the point where the game that, so it was supposed to be a two-night game between the White Sox, Chicago White Sox, and the Detroit Tigers. And they destroyed the field to the point where the White Sox had to forfeit their game to the Tigers the next night.
Oh my God.
They couldn't actually play on the field.
Yeah, now, that's what I wonder, like, if they're blowing up records.
Yeah.
And that's
everywhere.
When climate change started.
Right.
That was it, guys.
Thanks. That's why Chicago is fucked. No. So a lot of people, you know, even today, they sort of ask the question, you know, what happened? What fueled this? And a lot of people think that there was a hatred of disco that was fueled by the perception of its association with black people. A lot of disco artists were black, and with LGBTQ, because it was, you know, huge in the LGBTQ.
But using the mask of, like, sex, drugs, and all that, and everything to do with the club culture.
Exactly.
As it's, like, cloak and dagger routine, when really it's just rooted in racism.
And a lot of people, you know, a lot of people said, oh, you know, it was just, you know, it focused too much on appearances. That's why we don't like it. It's like,
how ridiculous.
Really? Come on now. Queen. That was like rock music and appearances. Hello. And they felt that, you know, it was, like, a lot of people really get upset when they feel that something that they have is going to be taken away from them. And so that year, 1979, at the 21st Grammy Awards, disco songs pretty much cleaned up. And so people thought that it was the end of rock and roll. You know, they're super dramatic. Rock and roll wasn't going anywhere. Come on now. That was a genre started by black people. It was not going to go anywhere.
So you mean our entire pop culture is on the arms of black ancestors?
Right?
I'd never believe it.
Exactly. Even country music.
Yes.
Don't get it twisted. But so, I mean, there was this fear, and you know how the masses are when they've got a fear of losing something, losing power, losing their standing. They go crazy and they destroy shit, and that's...
It's history repeating itself.
Yeah,
and I think
over
this
and over
year
and over.
We've relived that in our own, you know,
sort of way,
yeah. But I think, like, the amplifier's been, you know, that we have an internet connection, you know, and that's as opposed
imagine?
To, like, you know, people actually getting to the streets and relying on media coverage and all that kind of stuff.
God, if internet went out, I think there'd be, like, massive wars all over the place. Who
most
would
probably
lose their shit.
Exactly. Well, that's what we're going to be talking about this week, which is disco. So you've had a history lesson already.
Yeah,
right. And we're going to have a short break, and when we come back, we're going to hear from Gracie Mack first. All right, stay tuned.
And we're back. Welcome to another episode of Chefology. This week we are talking about a disco, giving you some Soul Train realness.
This is not a disco song, but this is the only. It's the closest we got. What's the other one that I have?
No.
Oh, sorry. Okay. So that's not the one.
Disco is not a joke.
No, it truly is not.
All right, so we have all chosen some bangers, if I do say so myself, and we're going to check in with lovely Gracie Mac to find out what her disco choices are.
Well, I've been having an awesome afternoon playing through all these tunes. It was so exciting. And it was quite hard to pick just five.
Yeah, it was actually.
It was really hard. I mean, I could have picked so many different. There was a couple of ones that I went by the band. I was like, I have to have them. And I just picked whichever, you know, it could have been so many. And then a couple I went by specific songs.
All right.
So this first one, Young Hearts Run Free. I love this song so much. It's so, so beautiful. So it was originally recorded by Candy Staton in 1976 and released on an album of the same title. Our listeners may be more familiar with the pumpier version from 1996 by Kim Mazzell, which is in Romeo and Juliet.
Yes, Mercutio comes out in drag and performs it.
That's that's definitely where I first heard it. But I, since being a child and watching that movie, I've gone back and discovered the original version of the song by Candy. So that's the version I'd like to be added to the list, the Candy Staton version.
I'll get onto that, thank you.
Oh, yeah. You know, they're not particularly different, really. But it's a little bit more relaxed. And the song was written for Candy, so, you know, it's her song. It was written by producer David Crawford. And the story I read about, it came out of a lunch that Candy and David were having. They were kind of catching up. And he was asking about her life, and she was talking about this quite abusive relationship that she had been in, was still in, and finding it really hard to get out of. And he was making notes during the conversation.
Oh, wow.
And Crawford said, you know, I'm going to write you a song. I'm going to write you a song that's going to last forever. Now, when I read that, I was like, what a piece of shit friend. She's literally telling you about an abusive relationship that she's still in. And you're like, great, I'm going to write a banger about it. See you later.
She's just taking notes while she's talking.
Ridiculous, like, yeah. but anyway, you know. Good friend, bad friend, good producer, I suppose.
This Did is, he give this her is some lesson of the money?
For you kids. I don't know how that was broken.
Did he get
down.
Her a hospital? That's a
Did he rescue her?
I don't think so, but you know, that's a lesson for all of your kids. Don't make friends with the producers.
They will take everything you say and turn it into a song and you get nothing.
Anyway, the song spent number one on the Hot Soul Singles Charts. I don't actually know for how long. I don't know why I wrote the song spent number one. But it went to number one on the Hot Soul Single Charts and it peaked at number 20 on the Hot 100 Singles Chart.
Nice.
Lovely crossover.
Lovely, lovely. Moving along. My number two song, another straight up single that I just love, Disco Inferno.
Yes.
Oh. Good song. Such a good song. So pumpy. The string, I play a lot of these songs that I'm going to talk about today, and I'm sure a lot of the ones that my fellow shuffologists are going to talk about. I play a lot of them in a band, in like a Motown soul disco band I've been playing in for a little while.
I was asked to be in a disco band one time.
For a couple of years, yeah. I mean, it's very fun.
And I'm pretty sure they were called Disco Inferno.
Oh, yeah. Right. Maybe it was like a tribute band or something.
Yeah, Tramps. Yeah.
Yes. Well, yeah, so this song's by the Tramps with two M's, guys. The Tramps.
Tramps.
Yes.
That's right. But I play this song in a disco band. It goes off. Like, the crowd always loves it. It's always so pumpy and enjoyable. Especially that string line at the beginning, which is a pain in the ass to play. No.
It's that one.
That's like the basic version.
Oh, right. Okay.
That some people try play because it's a pain in the ass to play the actual string line.
They look for the easy piano on musicnotes.com.
Thank you. Yes.
Easy piano. That's right. Anyway, but it's exciting. Sometimes I just like fudge it the times that I have like stuffed it up, but you just get the hit at the end when the band comes
in.
It's like, all right, brought it back.
You're like, don't mind me.
This is from by the Tramps, as I mentioned before, but from the fourth eponymous album released 1976. And it hit number one on the Billboard Dance Club Songs charts in 1977. But it wasn't until 1978 that it got mainstream chart release on the Billboard Hot 100 because it was featured on the soundtrack of Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah.
The movie.
Huge moment for disco.
Yes.
As much as I hate to admit it. But
it's sort of...
What do you mean? Why do you hate to admit it?
I just don't like John Travolta. That's just, yeah.
I mean, that movie was fucking awesome. Yeah. It was iconic, you know.
And that movie sort of brought disco into the mainstream because it showed that it wasn't just for gays and blacks, but white, straight men as well.
Which, like, I kind of, like, have an issue with at the same time.
Taking right. it, yeah,
yes. Where we needed a white savior to bring disco to. Anyway, I'm not.
No, I hear what you're saying. Yeah.
But that's almost like every genre, though, isn't it?
That's
pretty much what's
happening. I always think of that scene in Dreamgirls where they just did like, I got me a Cadillac, and they got like this white guy.
Oh,
at the
it's
beach,
amazing,
like,
isn't
yeah.
it?
I got me a Cadillac.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my
like
god.
Like the sweet girls just, and the fucking cardigans or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah, amazing.
Anyway.
It is interesting, isn't it? Like it's sort of, yeah, maybe it's a discussion for another day, but yeah, the idea of whitewashing something to bring it into the mainstream, which I'm fortunately fucking white, but bring it into the mainstream culture and frame of mind,
yeah,
but trying to do that in a way that you're also paying homage to what it's actually.
That's true. Like, and also John Travolta put butts in the seats. Like there's
sure.
You know what I mean? Like he was a huge, like this is pre Welcome Back Kotter, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
And pre Grease, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. So
Yeah, I think it's his first big movie, right?
Yes.
I think it is. Yeah. Written by Sylvester Stallone, if you didn't know.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So it hit number 11 after it was on the soundtrack of this movie. So I suppose you could say, in just a, even though unfortunately it was led by a white man, the soundtrack was a lot of black artists. So that was great.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I have the sound. Well, it was a lot of Bee Gees, actually. I have the soundtrack. Yeah. I have
Bee Gees
the soundtrack.
Bee Gees
and then black artists.
Yeah. No, but the Bee Gees are a huge part of the movement.
They are. Like, they're huge.
And so talented.
Yeah.
Definitely. Like,
yeah. Anyway, sorry. Yep.
From Redcliffe.
Well, by way of the UK.
They like to say.
By way of the UK.
Redcliffe likes to say. Yeah.
Just like Keith Urban.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. I only just found out today that he's actually from New Zealand.
Yeah,
I was
exactly.
Like,
yeah,
what?
I saw that today too.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't care about Keith Urban. No. So let's continue on. It was covered by Tina Turner in 1993.
Oh, yeah, it was too. Yes. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And she did it kind of a bit more rocky. Yes. Like it was more of a rock feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's still like. Like, yeah, it was like just kind of punchier, more in your face arrangement. Just like, you know, it does that so good.
Yeah.
And there's also a really terrible cover by Cyndi Lauper for the 1998 soundtrack for the movie A Night at the Roxbury.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
I have that soundtrack.
And
as
I mean,
well.
I actually don't. I mean, I don't mind the song so much. I just think her voice sounds terrible on it.
Aww.
It's just not. I don't think it works.
Because I actually think Cyndi Lauper is one of the most underrated vocalists in female music history.
Disagree.
Her verse in We Are the World, the Michael Jackson compilation recording.
Are you serious?
Yes. She sings a living crap out. Yeah. Have you seen the behind the scenes of the recording?
I don't need to, but no.
No, I haven't.
Anyway, I think she's incredible.
Okay.
Yes.
I disagree, but I think she's definitely, I suppose it depends. I suppose it depends on what you mean by incredible, because I think she's like a song stylist.
Yes.
And sometimes it really works, but I don't think it works with this.
Well, also she doesn't write her music too, so she really is an interpreter rather than a,
creator.
Creator.
She won Tony's for Kinky Boots.
Well, that was her first actually huge writing for
a really?
Yeah, like
oh,
where
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
okay.
Sort of thing. You know, even True Colors, not her song. It's a cover.
Sacrilege.
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
I did not know
and
that.
That's a good song.
Yes, that's one of my favorite songs. Anyway.
Anyway, on September 15th, 2005, this song was inducted into the Dance Music Hall of Fame.
As it should be. Yeah. As it should be. Oh, I thought I actually pressed the button. Sorry, guys. No, but my finger went like it. Anyway, sorry, schematics.
Moving along here. I'm going to hit you with some Earth, Wind & Fire.
You better.
Yes. And there's so many songs I could have chosen, but I just, you know, close my eyes.
Oh, I love
and
them.
Let my finger hit the map, and I went for Let's Groove.
Oh, yes. Good song.
Let's Groove tonight.
Good. It's so good. I love this, like, vocoder synthesizer
I think they're very innovative, too, that band. Like, because experimentation that worked for them as opposed to like, this is odd, but I kind of like it. It's like, this is good. Like,
it was such schmick arranging, writing, everything was just
and they
so
were a
well
show
done.
Band too.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm pretty sure
and
my
we don't
dad,
get that in the
no,
industry now.
I'm pretty sure my dad said that like he went to a concert and they like came out of a spaceship or something. It was either
so cool.
It had to have been them because so awesome. I'm pretty sure my dad wouldn't have seen George Clinton. So I was like, it's either George Clinton or that, but I'm pretty sure it was them because he would. Because, yeah, that's, yeah, he'd talk about them all the time. It's one of his favorite.
Which also is a part of the disco thing in the sense of, like, you got booked.
Oh, the theatrical.
Yeah, the theatricality of it all. Yeah. And also, like, if, like, an A&R rep went to a club and saw a show like that, they would sign you because they're this is amazing. Mm. That doesn't happen much anymore, like, sort of thing where there's not as much, like, oh, it's really hard to say, but it's like, you know, Earth, Wind & Fire were the right people at the right time.
Yeah.
And the white record label executives ate them up. Like, like there was no tomorrow. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Well, this song is from their 11th studio album called Raise in 1981. Yeah. So it was actually, there's really interesting hearing that information about the end of disco Asabi, because I read about this song that it was 1981. So, and it was at the end of the disco era of, you know, the 70s.
Yeah.
But so it's kind of considered post-disco, as you could call it, just because of its era. But and so it was sort of questioned, I think, by the record execs whether it would be successful at all because it was so disco. But it was a huge commercial success.
Yeah, it was massive.
And they've incorporated all these kind of funk pop sounds of synthesizers.
Mm.
So that's the risk that we were talking about before, Josh. Yes, it's a huge commercial success inside the top 20s in the US, New Zealand, UK, Canada. Huge song.
And like, as if people don't want to hear September Now.
Right.
Well, you know, like, they're amazing.
Is less groove.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, but I'm just saying, like, Earth, Wind & Fire, like, they have actually stood the test of time when you think
Absolutely.
About it. Yeah.
And Maurice White, one of the main songwriters and the lead singer, he wrote this song as well, along with Wayne Vaughn. And it was a lead single from this particular album. I didn't say that before. The video clip for this song, it's awesome. Have you guys seen it?
I haven't.
Oh my God, it's so good. Just like so much of the stuff that this band did, and I guess a lot of 80s bands, but they're just experimenting. It's like someone got a new toy. It's like some random little program that someone's found that like is super trippy, and they've just like, you know, fucked with the video clip. It's really funny. It's like the band is like, it's definitely choreographed. Like they've figured out stuff. There's a lot of like floating multiple heads of Morris.
Oh, I have seen this. Yeah where it like goes out. And
yeah, there's lots of that. Yes. There's lots of like big colorful triangles, very like
trendy,
shaping them, coming
trendy.
At you. It's so 80s. It's
trippy.
It's awesome. It's hyper colorful. Yes. Experience with different shapes and outlines around the band. It's great.
It's awesome.
It was created by this guy Roy Hayes using the Scanimate analog computer system. I mean, who knows? But I'm sure it was cutting edge at the time.
Probably.
But it's like a trippy 80s dream.
You know,
it's
we
great.
Can do it on our phones now.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I use that filter a lot.
Yeah, it literally calls it like a filter. Yeah. moving along, I got two more choices.
Yes.
I'm so excited to listen to this playlist just for my own, and I'm sure you guys are going to add some bangers.
Well, I'm seeing a couple of friends this weekend, so I might play this playlist.
Yes,
yeah.
You should.
This
would
be sick.
Pump y'all up. I've chosen I'm Every Woman. Shaka
Khan. Oh, yes. Hold on. There we go.
Yes, yes,
always a popular choice on this
love this song.
On this podcast. I think we've chosen I Remember When a couple of times.
I think we have.
Yeah. I think I chose the Whitney Houston
version
from
The
Bodyguard.
We did covers.
Yeah.
But Asabi loves Shaka Khan. I'm about to say Shakira.
Shakira.
Yeah,
Shaka. Yeah. And this is from her debut album called Shaka.
Yes.
1978.
Yeah, we had this on our very first playlist.
Shaka Khan said, it's my
thing.
So
song?
What?
Yeah, I'm Every Woman by Shaka Khan.
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
Because I'm
okay.
Like,
such a good one.
This is an Ashford and Simpson, right? I think they wrote it.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nicholas Ashford.
They're really
and Valerie
big
Simpson.
Motown songwriters, by the way. Everyone just
mm-hmm. Yes, they were. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It was her first hit outside her band Rufus.
Yes.
This is like her solo career, and it really like established her as a solo artist, this song.
Coming out of the funk and all that kind of stuff.
And Whitney Houston covered it in 1992, making a hit for the newer generation after Shaka, which
and
is
it
awesome.
And it sounds so 90s too, when you think like it's like
yeah,
there's like the
oh,
70s
yeah, she
disco.
Starts with like the like
whatever
breakdown at the beginning. Yeah.
And sorry,
yeah.
I went. Josh.
I didn't realize it. You guys probably knew this because it's already been on the playlist, but I didn't know that Sissy Houston, Whitney's mom, is one of the backing vocalists on the Shaka version.
Yes.
It's amazing. I didn't
and
know
also
that.
Background vocals on Respect by Aretha Franklin.
Oh, she did so many huge artists. Shaka's version of this hit, her the OG version, hit number one, number 21 on the Billboard Hot 100, number 30 on the chart, on the disco chart, and number one on the Hot Soul single chart.
Yep.
Which I got to say, from the amount of number ones I see on the Hot Soul single charts, that seemed to be like the most banging chart in the 70s and, yeah. like, and early 80s.
Well, the radios were still quite segregated as well.
The radio stations were segregated into the 90s. Like, even I remember, you know, like, we don't play rap. You know, and I'm ridiculous. Like, whoa, okay.
Well, there's still radio still has its like genre. There's definitely still genre radio. Like country radio in America is its own beast.
Well, yeah,
compared to like
different pop radio. You know, I wonder if country radio plays that Little Nas, what's his face, a Billy Ray Cyrus tune.
Oh, the Old Town Road, the one that broke my Mariah Carey's record. Yeah, yeah. We don't talk about that.
Do you know what? That just made me think of the segregated thing. I forgot to mention with Let's Groove, the film clip for that was the first film clip to be aired on Video Soul, BET's program that they brought out in as a response to MTV refusing to play black artist songs.
Yeah.
It was like the first song that was ever, a film clip that was ever aired on BET's Video Soul.
Yeah, MTV would only play black artists at certain times because they didn't want to offend their white viewers in the Midwest.
As a response, BET brought out this program called Video Soul, and it was an opportunity for black artists to showcase their art. Mm. My final choice.
Yeah.
I've chosen Kool & the Gang.
Oh, yeah.
Great song.
Great band. The song I've chosen.
Sorry, great band. Sorry.
The song I've chosen, because this is another one I was like, I got to choose Kool & the Gang. They're actually going to play at Blues Fest this year, weren't they? They were going to come to Blues Fest.
They're coming next year.
Are they?
Yeah, they're on the lineup.
Oh, was that the one that Alanis Morissette was going to be headlining?
Yes. Please, let's not talk about it. Yes. I'm gutted.
I don't know if I'd want to see these guys. I mean, potentially they'd be good, but I kind of have a bit of a thing with, I don't want to see the band now.
Yeah.
I want to see them in the 80s.
Yeah.
Like, I'll just go listen to the, well, it's like, I'll just go listen to the recording. I'd rather see, unless they've created new music that they want to.
That's like when you see nostalgia acts at like.
I'm not a fan. Nostalgia acts is not my thing.
I don't, like, I saw S Club 3 one time.
S Club 3?
What happened to the other four?
Look, four retired or something, but it was just so odd. Like, just
that's so odd.
Were they working with canes and?
No, but like, it's really, really like I feel bad even like thinking these thoughts. But it's the whole like they're looking a little, they're getting a little old.
Aww.
Like,
well,
you know, dad bods on show sort of thing. But like I love dad bod personally.
That's how time works. And when you're marketed as this hot young thing, and you're desperately trying to keep that going, like, you know, like these people, like I hate that because you're just like,
and like
stop
the
trying
lead
to be
singer
Joe,
like I think like she lost what she lost intonation as well as her passion for the music.
Oh,
like,
no.
It was
why
just
is
like,
she there? I guess they need the money.
Nostalgia acts are cash grabs.
Yeah,
completely
for sure. Mm. Anyway, I've chosen Get Down On It. Cool & the Gang.
Get Down On It. Get Down On It.
Yeah, it's great. 1981 album, Something Special, which was their 13th album.
Holy moly.
And they had a couple of, quite a few after that as well. It was a huge amount of albums
they
brought
out.
Yeah,
they did. Massive.
So much shit. Hit top 10 on the US pop and R&B charts in Billboard and reached number 3 on the UK charts. UK
come on,
charts.
United Kingdom.
Yeah. Go, go, go.
Free Brexit.
Now with the... good Lord. this song has a lot of funk elements that the band did so well. And I got to say, it's like particularly with Earth, Wind & Fire and with this band, Kool & the Gang, I really feel like they... what's going on over here?
Sorry.
You know, there's only three of us.
Asabi wanted to charge her phone, but I let her know that's actually for sound, not for charging.
I have to imagine my audience if you guys don't listen to me. Kool & the Gang and Earth, Wind & Fire. They have all these very strong funk elements. I was having this discussion with my partner today about what's the overarching umbrella of all of this, because it's like funk into disco and then I suppose into pop
or hip-hop radio
not
sonically the same. I understand what you're saying.
No, but you know, for like these bands that like, depending on what song you've chosen, cross, like the, and like, I guess, and we sort of thought, I don't know what you guys think about this, but we kind of figured maybe R&B is the very overarching umbrella of like rhythm and blues.
Yeah, yeah.
And then these are all sub-genres and then, to R&B.
Yeah, what do you guys think about that?
I think a university textbook would do that. For
would
sure.
Say that rhythm and blues is the main genre, and then you've got funk and soul and hip hop and.
Well, when I was studying pop music at university,
do tell.
They actually called the entire music industry rock. So it would go rock, which would melt, which would split into pop, and then R&B, and then all the sub.
So with disco, more of a pop.
Because pop just means popular. It wasn't actually like a genre until we made it a genre, of thing. Because like what's really interesting is that what I considered pop music 10 years ago isn't pop, like it's not popular now.
Yeah, it's not pop now.
You know, sort of thing.
But,
there,
but there's a difference between pop and popular.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, in,
like now.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Well, absolutely. Like, yeah. So it's one of those things where like I think, like for example, disco is absolutely a subgenre of funk.
Yeah, do you think?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So this is what I was wondering about. Because, you know, like, because I'm like with, okay, so what's it like with Let's Groove or September? They're like these, I feel like the characteristics for me of disco have usually a lot of arrangement happening. They're very vocal led. And then, and like there'll be a lot of strings, maybe some horns, but like lots of shit happening on the top. And then funk is, in my mind, maybe more led by the rhythm section. It's like a groove.
Yes, and I agree with you. And I think that's why, like, when you look at the transition from funk into disco, for a radical example, is that disco went from being a band-led genre into a solo artist-led movement.
Yeah.
Because it then became about, like, Diana Ross. Donna Summer, who was, you know, because it was, so maybe it's that thing of like, disco started out as a subgenre, but then it definitely became a mainstream genre.
Interesting.
Yes. I like, but that's good that we can talk about that on,
and
share opinions like that on the podcast. There's probably lots of you out there that probably disagree,
I'm sure there is,
purists, you know, that kind of stuff.
People might feel specific things, but because I did wonder, like, I wonder if people would be like, oh, Cool and Gang, kind of a funk group, are that, you know, like, but I mean, they've had so many albums, so but anyway, finishing off with this song, the video clip is, it's another one of those. Someone got a new toy, because it's like, now that one's straight up just a filter. Like the band is doing nothing but just performing the song. Like there's no actual arrangement of the video clip. And it's just like, I don't know what you call it, but you know, when you move and your body, there's like staggered, slow delay of your body moving.
Yeah.
So it's, it looks like there's like,
looks
10
like
of you.
Looks like a slinky.
Yeah. Like that.
Yeah. I think the alphabet of L, S, and D definitely informed
artistic
decisions.
I'm sure
and,
it did.
And also, like, you know, drug culture was huge in the disco movement as well. And I think, like, I definitely
dare
trippy.
Say,
you know, that the
trippiness.
Yeah, and also once they started adding the, like those visuals in clubs, like once you know, clubs started getting televisions in there, that all served the purpose of the whole thing.
Yeah, and this is like every, like the slinky effect. It's all just super colorful of them. So it totally fits into that. And those are my five choices.
That was amazing, Grace. I loved that. All right, we're going to take a short break and then we'll be back with my choices.
Yes, we will. How exciting. Stay tuned.
Hello, welcome back.
Hi.
As you know, we've been talking about disco. That high energy, beautiful music that we love so much. Asabi, what have you chosen?
Oh my gosh. Like you, it was so hard to choose. And also like you, my very first one, like as soon as we announced that we were going to do disco, I thought, oh, I want to put this song on it. But it was a song that I'd put on the playlist back in the beginning of Chefology. So took it off.
I guess I'll check in those early days.
Exactly. I know, because I was thinking, wait a minute, why? No, I've already done the song. Anyway, I chose five bangers by my opinion. The first song is by the sister group Sister Sledge.
Oh, icons.
Yes. So good.
And I wonder why he's the greatest dancer. That's love that song. So that's off their We Are Family album. Another great tune by them.
Probably the most iconic song, yes.
Oh, yeah, that song. Like, it goes, we play it at every wedding.
Yeah.
It goes off. So now these next two names you're going to hear throughout my choices because they were all over disco. I don't think you could have disco without them. Nile Rodgers and Bernard Edwards.
Oh, Nile Rodgers. I haven't heard that name from you in ages.
Right? So they actually wrote this tune. And it's number 66 out of 100 of Billboard's greatest girl group songs of all time. It also went number one on the Billboard Dance and R&B charts and number nine on the Billboard Hot 100. It's been sampled by so many people, but Will Smith on his Getting Jiggy With It.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we all knew that. And I didn't know this. It was covered by Danny Minogue in 2007.
Oh, okay.
Loosely. Yeah.
Okay, Danny. Well,
I know. I didn't get a chance to like check it out.
Are you familiar?
I'm very familiar.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And we don't have to talk about it anymore.
All right, thank you.
But,
Saz Danny. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to listen to it. Now, of course, it's got that opening guitar riff. I probably didn't do it well, but it carries throughout the song. And then I just love the blended and harmonious vocals that are in there with the women, the synth, the strings, as we were talking earlier. That's, you know, quintessential disco.
Sorry.
And then, of course, Rodgers and Edwards feature on the song, as well as the Schick strings, or who is it? Gene Orloff's Schick strings, as they call it. So they were all over this track for Sister Sledge, and it's a fantastic track. It's just it's one of my favorites. I love the song so much. So on my scale of singability, I guess a 9. All right, now I did not go in chronological order, but a majority of my songs are from the 70s. Yeah, this is so good. So my next song, this is another good one that you're going to love. Boogie Nights. Yes. Ain't no doubt we are here to party. Love that song. I love disco because it just makes me think of one giant happy party. And I mean, that was when I was a teenager, that was all I wanted. I just wanted to be happy and to party and dance and sing, have a great time. And disco music did that for me in my bedroom late at night by myself. I love this tune. It's off of the one that we might be more, our listeners might be more familiar with, was covered by Casey and the Sunshine Band.
Yeah.
All right. So everybody knows Boogie Nights from them, but the original was by Heatwave, and it doesn't sound too different from Casey's version. And it was off of their debut album in 1977 called Too Hot to Handle.
Yes, he is, girl.
Yeah. So, you know, that opening, it's got layered strings and vocals. It is pretty much a simple song, but I love the key solo in the middle. You know, it kind of breaks down. And then it's just like my favorite bit is dance with the boogie, get down. Cause boogie nights are always the best in town. Boogie nights. It reminds me.
It's also a film with Mark Wahlberg in it as well.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure it's a musical as well. There's a musical called Boogie Nights.
When
yeah.
does it stop?
Oh, it God. Just doesn't.
There's nothing sacred.
No, not when you're getting down with the boogie.
I was listening to the Moulin Rouge Broadway recording recently, and I went, oh, that's right. This movie had covers. So it was just all pop. It was just all musical pop covers. When does it stop?
Yeah, no.
Seriously. Anyway, sorry, keep going. Yeah.
So anyway, this, like, I have memories, because I'm that old, of being on the roller rink, roller skating, and hearing this tune.
Skate 2000.
Yeah, right?
Oh my God.
So, like, this was just one of those, like, and this is early 80s, so it even wasn't that old, you know? So roller skating, and you're hearing Boogie Nights, and you're like, yay, get down.
Oh, that'd be so fun.
Yeah, it was just, it's so nostalgic. So now, this song went to number one in New Zealand, because New Zealand knows what's up.
Zealand were roller skating.
They do.
Right? Yeah. And then it was number two on the Billboard Hot 100, because America was a little bit behind, but it's okay. It was 1977, so disco was kind of sliding out.
Before disco demolition.
Right, yeah, just before. It was written by Rod Temperton, who was the keys player for Heatwave, and then, like I said before, it was famously covered by Casey and the Sunshine Band.
Yes.
Now, on Asavi's scale of singability, this one gets a 10. So good. Now, my next tune is a largely instrumental tune. It does have a few lyrics, but they're very, very simple. It's called The Hustle.
Oh, famous.
Yes, yes, by Van McCoy and the Soul City Symphony. Yeah. And basically the lyrics are, do the hustle. Ooh, do it. That's it. Simple song. Really easy to learn.
I'd still mess those lyrics up right. on stage.
It's like, no, that should have been an ooh, not a do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So now this song is just, it's fun. And I love, like, oh, I've said this so many times. I love a flute. Love a good flute. And the flute plays the melody and this. You know, and then it's got the strings and it's got this little sappy trumpet a la Chuck Mangione. I mean, it's, and then it, like, I'm thinking of this song and all I can think is glitter and gold. That's what I see. Solid gold dancers, Soul Train, all of it. It's got a subtle guitar that sort of goes off in the middle.
Camp. I like that.
Yeah, it's a total campy, like,
Studio it's 54, right here.
Totally. Just like the little
Lady Godiva,
the man in the little gold boy shorts and like gold body, and just
my spirit animal. Yeah,
right. Oh, I'm so gutted that I was born 10 years too late to enjoy Studio 54. But there is one in Vegas, and I have been to that one, and I have enjoyed myself thoroughly.
Okay,
anyway. So now, this song was number one on the Billboard Hot 100. Number one. Ooh. Very few lyrics. Dancey, dancey, dancey. And I should say it came out in 1975 on the Disco Baby album. It was number three in the UK, and it hit number nine in Australia.
Oh, Australia finally decided to dance.
Yeah, right. Join the party. Nice. And it won the Grammy for Best Pop Instrumental Performance. All right. It's a Grammy winning soon. Song. Again, number 10 on Asabi's scale of singability.
Oh, great.
It's so easy to sing. All right. Now, my fourth tune is a Diana Ross tune.
Woo-hoo!
I'm Coming Out.
Oh,
so good.
Yeah.
Love
my favorite
song.
Era of Diana Ross.
Yes.
Is this era.
Now, this song actually was released in 1980, so it was on the tail end. Just
post-demolition.
Yeah, post-demolition. So it might be considered a post-disco tune, I don't know. But it was her 10th studio album called Diana, because she is Diana Ross.
Big album.
And I believe it was the first album that she did post-Motown as well.
No Barry Gordy. Yeah. Barry Gordy really involved.
That's right. So it was produced by Chic.
Yes.
So Niall and Bernard, they're right up in there. And I love this song because it's sort of a song of empowerment and strength, you know, and just being yourself. It's pure joy. That's how I look at it. And I love how, you know, there's this little teaser of Diana's voice in the beginning. You know, it's just very subtle. You just hear this, I'm coming. And then don't. And, you know, it's just, and it's, you've got the horn sort of playing, and it just keeps playing that over and over before it finally comes in with the full song. And oh, it's just beautiful. So you've got a horns mix, you've got, you know, Niall's guitar. Oh, he's just amazing. I love him. And then I love how the band sort of mirrors the chorus throughout the verse. So Bernard's really playing it up there. And yeah, and then it just, you know, goes into some funky horns in the end.
It does.
Now, Rogers, I've actually heard this story. So when I was reading this, I've actually heard him tell this story. So he was saying that he got the idea from the song when he was out at a club with his mates, right?
Yep. I love this story.
And they're in the bathroom and he sees these three drag impersonators come out, and they're all dressed like Diana Ross.
Yep.
And they're all coming out of them. And, you know, he's kind of like, Bernard, we got to write this song. I got this idea, you know. And
yeah, they were really happy when they were writing it too. That was the whole
thing.
Yeah,
they were really happy about it. And so that's kind of the idea of the song, was that these drag queens were coming out. But then there's also that phrase of coming out being the way you sort of announce your sexuality as well. And Diana Ross was not familiar with that. And when she learned that that's what the term meant, she actually was afraid that it was going to ruin her career.
Yep.
But it's like one of her biggest hits. It is the song since 1980. It's the song that she opens every concert with.
And she can still sing it really, really well.
Yes,
I have
she
to
can.
Say.
And she, yes.
Her voice has actually been quite well preserved.
Nice.
So that even amongst the copious amounts of alcohol she's drunk in her career.
I think that just proves that it's not alcohol that ruins the voice. It's the cigarettes and everything else.
Exactly. Right. And also, and that this song, like, you know, Diana went from just like, she just slotted into being a gay icon after this whole thing. And
yes.
So was this like the beginning of a gay icon from this song? I think it
more solidified it, if that makes sense. Yeah, okay, so because it was that thing of like, oh, because, you know, back then, yes, disco was a thing, right? Mm. But there wasn't a song that was so explicitly like an anthem for people to come out to and it not be like this emotional ballad and like be taught, you know, I'm a tortured soul. It's like sort of thing. And it's a quintessential drag number.
Mm. Yeah. It is, for sure. It is. Yeah. And I would say that, you know, she was already a gay icon because
there's queens dressing up as her.
Yeah. Exactly. Once drag queens start dressing up as you, you're on your way.
Yeah.
And I love when a drag queen just does a really good Diana, like with the really, really big wig that has like glitter in it, this perfect like sequin glittery jumpsuit sort of like, I just like, and they have the red lip and I'm like, oh, you look so beautiful.
Silky almost pulled it off.
Almost. Oh, there's one drag queen that hasn't been on Drag Race. I'll get the video.
Yeah.
Does this stunning Diana.
Oh, I'd love to see it. I would love to see it because, I mean, if most people who know me know that I am in love with drag.
And when she did The Wiz, like that was a really, like, like her version of Home, people, like the gays just tore it. Yeah, like they loved it.
Yeah, it was good. Anyway, so again, on Asabi's scale of singability, that one gets a 10.
Yeah, as it should. And Diana Ross is RuPaul's woman, as in, like gays always said, they have their queen, and Diana Ross is RuPaul's queen.
Yep. All right, my fifth and final choice. Ooh. So we've talked about these gentlemen throughout because, like I said, you can't have disco without Chic. So my final choice is Good Times by Chic.
Oh, nice.
Yes. It's off their 1979 album, Risqué. And I just have to say, clams on the half shell and roller skates. That says it all right there. That like
clams on the half shell.
Like, what is more disco and like fabulous and saying, you know, we're rolling in money, literally rolling, than clams on the half shell and roller skates. I mean, it's like the guitar riff is iconic. The bass line is iconic.
Mm.
It's got everything that is the element of disco.
Forgive my ignorance, but can I just check?
Mm.
So the band Chic that did Les Freak, different band?
No, it's the same
It's the same band.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool. Nile Rodgers, Bernard Edwards.
Okay, I was tripping out for a second there.
No, that's okay.
But there was a female lead as well.
Well, yeah. No. So Nile plays guitar, Bernard plays bass, and then they had singers and
disco Phil Spector's Phil Spector sort of thing. We create our own wall of sound with like unknown singers.
And you know, Nile Rodgers at one time was the most successful producer in the world because when people have hired him to sort of create the Chic sound for their music. Yeah. And this is around the world, you know, so he's been flown everywhere. And he talks about, you know, like the first time he was asked to do it, he was like, I don't know if I want to do that. And then when he saw how much money they were willing to pay him, he was like,
Well, it was giving the power to the producer because they realized they were actually the brains behind the number one.
Exactly.
And if you
look at all of the songs that Nile is actually behind, you'd be shocked. There's so many songs like Madonna, David Bowie, who else? Donna Summer. There's just so many people that he's written and produced music for. Like a Virgin, exactly. And when, you know, I saw Chic at Blues Fest a couple of years ago, and he's like,
"Nile Rodgers there,
yeah,
amazing."
Oh yeah, I got him on video too. It was amazing. And he talks about how people they think that Chic is just a covers band because they go around and they play all the songs that he's written, produced, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "No. This shit's mine.
Yeah, yeah.
This is my music. Other people sang it, but I wrote it. I produced it.
And that check is still rolling in. Come on, residuals.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh yeah."
Actually accompanied, I don't know her name, but the newest female Chic singer. Mm. She like got up and jammed with our band. She sung We Are Family.
Oh, what? Yeah, that's
it was
so
really
cool.
Exciting. She's so awesome. It was at in Byron Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Was that really a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would have seen her. I think I have her on video as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A very thin black woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like long luscious locks.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. She's gorgeous.
Yeah. She had this awesome like green onesie on. She had the whole like style just nailed.
Oh, yeah. So yes, if you get the chance to see, you know, Bernard Edwards sadly has passed away years ago, but Niall is still around and kicking. He's survived cancer. He's cleaned, like, you know, he's no longer doing drugs and that sort of thing. Wow. So, you know, he's just as amazing as ever.
Yeah. But imagine being that woman that they ask you to, like, just can you just tour the world with us and sing all of our hits?
I would not say no. I would just be like, bye, everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going.
And you know, like, if you're being asked, like, some of those producers from the old school are absolute assholes about singers. Like they will tear any singer apart. Mm. Like, yeah, it's just like,
well, you have to be like, I mean, with someone like Nile Rodgers, you can't fuck it up.
Yeah, exactly.
You cannot fuck it. Like, I would fire myself. It's just, you know.
I'd fire myself after I got the check for that week.
Well, yeah, that's right. Exactly. You pay me and I'm out.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah.
Now, I will say about Good Time. So it was the first sampled. It was first sampled by the Sugar Hill Gang for Rapper's Delight. So if you don't, right? So that bass line. And it's one of the most sampled songs in music history as well. Now, Niall says that it was partly inspired by Kool & Gang's song Hollywood Swingin'. Mm. And it features Depression-era lyrics like Happy Days Are Here Again, Happy Days Are Here Again. Yeah. And he said that that was to comment on the economic situation in the U.S. at the time. Yeah. It briefly, now this is what's sad about it, it briefly hit number one in 1979 for, like, I don't even know, like a minute, like a hot minute. And this was in August, so it was just post the disco demolition. And it was knocked
the blow up of that right? of vinyl.
Well, yeah. At least people bought it first. And it was knocked out by My Sharona by the Neck. Yeah, anyway. And on a Sabi scale of singability, it gets a 10.
Oh.
Yeah. Yes, I think every Chic song gets a 10. Like, yeah. As a matter of fact, that's my honorable mention. My honorable mention are all the other Chic songs.
Go
love
listen.
Them.
Oh,
yes.
I can't wait
and
for
anything by Nile Rodgers. Yeah. Yes. So that's my list.
So just to reiterate, yes to Nile Rodgers?
Yes to Nile Rodgers.
Okay. Yes. Okay, great.
Please call me Nile. I'm a fantastic singer. Check me out. Mm. Anyway.
Yeah, I'll sing anything you got.
Anything you want.
Thank you, Wasabi.
You're welcome.
For that beautiful, beautiful array of tunes. Stay tuned, everyone. We'll be back with Josh DeVetta's Choices.
And we're back
today.
We are talking all things disco. Yes, that wonderful, wonderful genre of dance and peace and love and fun and glitter and gold. And we've heard from myself and the lovely Gracie Mack, and now we're going to hear from the beautiful Josh DeVetta.
Hi.
Hey.
Beautiful. Well, I know that you guys are like, it was so hard. This was not hard for me. I knew exactly what I was going to choose. The hardest thing was actually honorable mentions because I was like, who else should I include in my in my audacious list? But so I'm going to talk firstly about Donna Summer because she is the undisputed queen of disco. A Christian woman, by the way, by the end of her life, like really, really devout Christian, everything like that.
Mm. Was she in the 70s though?
Well, I'm not quite sure.
I mean, love to love you, baby.
Well, I know. I think it's similar to Chaka Khan, where they found the Lord later in their career, sort of thing. Because Chaka Khan's a very devout Christian as well now. Also a gay icon, mm-hmm. very much so. She was on RuPaul's Drag Race this year as a guest judge and
she
Widow Fondue.
Amazing.
Yeah, she did. She looked incredible.
Didn't know what a merkin was.
Yeah.
And even after it was explained to her, still was like, what?
So cute. I'm going to start, kick the ball rolling. Keep the
Get
ball rolling.
Get the eight ball rolling.
Look, sports is not for today.
Exactly. Not
press play.
Not the balls on these two. Yeah. So. Now, this was a collaboration with the Barbra Streisand. And the song is called No More Tears. Brackets. Enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really. Like, this, when I hear this, this is like disco to me. Like, on a big level, like piano intro, and then the beat comes in, and it's just like, and I love that they actually sound quite good together too, I have to say.
No, like, of course.
Yeah. And I love that when, because Barbara still performs, because Donna Summer's not with us anymore, yes. but Barbara still performs this. And I watched her Netflix special a couple of years ago. And I love that, like, the song's done. She goes, "This is back when I thought I wanted to be hip."
Oh, God.
Do a disco song.
Yeah, do a disco song. And I just love that it has, like, yeah, that lovely piano. And it's like, "It's raining, it's pouring." Like, it's just like that whole very, what's that word that you use when it, like,
cascades.
Cascades, that's the one. I love that. I love, love, love that. Now, this song was also on her On the Radio album.
Yes.
On the Radio was another huge song by Donna Summer, if not one of her biggest. Also, Works Hard for the Money. And I love that that song's just about a sex worker. Like,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it truly.
I'm pretty sure the video is of a woman working at a diner.
No, I'm pretty sure she's walking the street corner. I'm pretty sure. Yes,
I don't remember.
She works hard for the money.
Okay.
And that was all because, like, you know, the whole thing about the working girl was becoming like this thing at the clubs and outside the clubs, and not just cis women, but also transgender women.
Working girl realness.
Yeah, working girl realness sort of thing. RuPaul loves the working girl.
Yes,
like,
she does. Yes.
Yeah. And based his entire, or her, or RuPaul the drag queen, based her entire fashion on the working girl for like the beginning parts of the career, sort of thing. Yeah, so it was also, I love that, like, most of these disco songs we're talking about, or if not all of them, are released on vinyl as well. There's something about vinyl that just, like, gets me excited about disco. Just like, not because I want to demolition it, but sort of thing. I'm looking at the album cover now, or the single cover of this song now, and it's just like Barbara and Donna back to back in black and white, no top. Like,
I gotta look that up. I bet that's
sort of
amazing.
Thing. It's really, really beautiful. And it was released on Columbia Records too, actually, which is really, really cool. Now, in regards to its chart performance, it was like top 10 basically everywhere. Number one on the Billboard Hot 100 because, come on, Donna. Come on, Barbara. Mm-hmm. In Australia, number 8, darling. So, Australia, we knew what was going on. Sort of thing. But also, like, you know, because our drag, actually, our whole, like, there are a beautiful, amazing stories about LGBT underground underground culture of, like, the gay bars here in Australia. Yes. It's actually stunning. That's why I love that, like, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert kind of represents a small...
I so want to go home and watch that when I get home.
Like, small, like, sort of, like, in a moment for that and things like that. So, yeah, that's my first choice. Donna Summer. Next is a Grammy-winning song.
Was it the 21st Grammys?
1979. But it was in, well, the song was released in 77.
Oh, okay. So maybe not.
And the song is called Don't Leave Me This Way.
Oh, yes.
By the amazing Thelma Houston, not related to Whitney Houston.
Nope, that's right.
And Whitney Houston was asked that a lot in the beginning parts of her career. Are you related to Thelma? And she's like, nope, we just have the same last name. Beautiful. This song. It actually went through a few iterations before it was properly released. So because she didn't write it, she was more the, and because she was also a Motown artist at the time as well.
Right,
and if you've seen Dreamgirls, like, they kind of like do this whole thing where, like, they were where Berry, well, the guy that's Berry Gordy but not Berry Gordy, was transitioning his artist into disco because he knew that was going to be the next sound to make it really, really successful. And turning ballads into disco songs was a huge thing that he did, which actually happens in the film and in One Night. And actually, I was going to put One Night Only as one of my choices, but it's actually not a real like charting song. It's just part of the musical. And I just love that, like did the whole, like, Diana thing and, like, slash Donna Summer thing and put the girls in, like, jumpsuits and big Diana wigs, and Beyonce looks hot.
I enjoy that transition. I was like, that's really cool.
They did that to destroy Effie's record because it was actually getting a bit of radio airplay with her ballad version. Anyway, Don't Leave Me This Way, huge song, really, really big, in the sense of, but interestingly enough, it only was big on, it didn't actually get anywhere on the Hot 100.
Oh, really?
So it was actually just a disco, like, the disco chart, number 3.
Yeah, and that was in 1977. Hey?
That was in 1977, exactly. Now, there was actually a couple of covers of this as well. Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes.
I know that name.
And it featured Teddy Teddy
Pendergrass?
Pendergrass's vocals in that, yeah. But I love this song. I think it just like, I love songs that like really are, and it might just be just because of who I am, but I love when songs set up a chorus to be really epic, and this song definitely does that. When it's like, oh, baby!
Yes,
and I just imagine the drag queen like doing the number. Definitely. And this is a number death like drop. Whether you're doing it in a bar, like in a dive bar or a really, really big club, the song works.
Yes.
Which is really, really cool. So, and again, strings, synths, everything we love about disco. Disco the cue. Which is good. All right. So that's choice number two.
Beautiful.
Choice number three. Now, this is one of my most favorite songs of all time. As soon as I hear the trumpets. Boom, 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 boom. And that has got to be real by Cheryl Lynn.
Yes.
And I always think of that scene in Sex and the City where Carrie comes out on the runway and then she walks down, she trips over.
Yes.
And Heidi Klum just walks over her.
Yes. That's right. Catwalk roadkill.
Yeah, catwalk. That's where she's fashion roadkill.
Oh,
and
my
I also
God.
Love that Margaret chose in that as well. She's like, oh my fucking God. That's all she said. That's all she can respond. Oh,
that song. Yes. So when I so saw good. That you'd chosen that song, I was like, no.
Me too. I did the same
really?
Thing.
Oh, yeah. I just
love it.
This song, like, I know that it definitely, okay, even though we, like, to us, we know that songs are timeless.
Yes.
The sound of it is definitely dated in the sense of, like, you could tell it's from the 70s. You can tell it's from disco, from the disco era. Yeah. Now, to me, it's timeless. But, like, you hear it and go, oh, this is a throwback, not a current sort of thing.
True.
In that sense. But, like, this, I also, Patti LaBelle performed this live with Mariah Carey one time. And, you know, the hot part when she's like, Mariah did the whistle up the next octave. And that was amazing. Came out in 78. for that one there. And it's actually one of the most popular, well-known songs in disco.
Oh, it's such a great song.
And what I didn't know is that David Foster was a part of the writing team for that song. David Foster wrote, like, I Have Nothing, arranged, like, he's a huge, like, you know, if you think of all the 90s diva ballads, David Foster's got his name on that.
Right.
Also, okay. David Foster arranged that Michael Bublé Jingle Bells.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't know that until I was like looking
at the
Pepini sisters. Pepini. I'm hungry now, girl. Yes. Yeah, that whole arrangement with the four background, that's David Foster's arrangement. Oh. And now when you hear it, you go, of course it was David Foster. Like, and he loves female singers. Like, he's all about, like, making them sing, you know, really, really high. That's his thing. which is really, really cool. What was I going to say? Oh, Ray Parker Jr. He was the guitarist on that one.
Oh, incredible. Really? Yeah, really. That's really. Ghostbusters, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is. It's Ghostbusters, yes. Yeah. This song, like, it just goes off. As soon as you hear, as I said before, as soon as you hear those horns come in, it's like when we talk about Missy Elliott, when you hear bum, 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 and you go straight to the dance floor.
Yeah.
Same
drink
thing.
Goes down.
Yeah, you hear those horns, you're like, ah! It's a boom, 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 dum, 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 which sounds very. Which is very similar to the Emotions, Best of My Love, like the exact same.
You've
got the best of my love. Which also Mariah Carey got sued for because she wrote Emotions and has the exact same thing. Boom, 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 boom. It's like that disco, that famous disco groove that we all love.
Yes.
Sort of thing. Really, really big hit. Number 12 on the Billboard in America. Just charted everywhere. And even in Australia. New Zealand. No, just New Zealand. Australia wasn't feeling it. But number 23 in New Zealand and number 70 on the UK singles. So the UK needed to catch the fuck up. That's what needed to go on. All right, let's move on. So this next song, what I'm loving is that what I've chosen is just basically my drag queen iPod playlist. So, which is very, very relevant. So the next song I've chosen, it's a little song by the Weather Girls.
Oh, that little song.
That little song.
That little tiny song.
Was it? How's it temperatures go? Rising.
Really?
Barometer's getting low. According to our sources, the street's the place to go.
Because tonight for the first time, just about half past ten. For the first time in history.
It's gonna start raining. Cisgender, non-binary, and trans men. Thank you very, very, very much. Thank you. All right. Ooh, so the Weather Girls. It's so funny that they're called the Weather Girls. They had this song. I don't know any other song by the Weather Girls, no. But I know this song.
Yeah, neither.
Also, they did a re-recording with RuPaul on this. Yes. As well. I love that it's like, yes. If you thought it was cold enough to go outside, you better stay the hell inside. It's about to rain up in here. Which, and then that was the famous lip sync between Sharon Needles and Fifi O'Hara.
Yes,
and
yes.
And it was really funny because Sharon was dressed as the devil and Fifi was dressed as the angel. It just looked like, I was like, you've definitely produced this. Like, this is a produced moment.
Now, who wrote that song?
It was written by Paul Jabara in collaboration with Paul Schaefer.
Yes.
And Bob Etsy.
Yes. And do we know who Paul Schaefer is?
Paul Schaefer is the, he's Canadian. And he's the guy on David Letterman.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Exactly. He's David Letterman's band leader.
Yes. Oh my
and
God.
So I learned this years ago and I was like, Paul Schaefer, I knew there was something about him.
Oh my God.
But
it's also really interesting that men are behind the disco sound. It's really, really interesting to me.
Yes. Is it? I mean, they were.
Well, they were kind of behind everything.
We're controlling everything at that point.
Well, that's true. But I need to rephrase what I just said. I find it interesting that because of the culture of disco and what it stood for with women and LGBT rights and all that, but it was these men writing the songs for the girls.
I'll just give you a little insight about what Niall had said because they wrote he's the greatest dancer and the women insisted they want to change some of the lyrics. And he was like, no. The reason we've written it this way is because we're actually out in the clubs. We know what's going on. If this man is the greatest dancer, he's not going to be going home before you because there's a line in there about, he's the creme de la creme and I want to take him home. And they're like, no, that makes us sound like we're, slutty. And he's like, trust me, he wouldn't be going home with you anyway. He'd be staying out dancing because that's what they do. And so I think men being out in the clubs probably more than women.
Informed the content.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
That makes sense.
Exactly.
Interestingly enough, they actually offered us to Donna Summer first.
Did they?
And she turned it down because she thought it was too blasphemous and she sent them a Bible the next day.
What?
Oh my God.
Actually, this
wait a minute. What so year funny. Was that?
78.
Because that. No, I'm not going to call her that. Yeah. She did Love to Love You, Baby. Well, you weren't here for the sex episode.
No, I wasn't
but,
here.
But, we told the story.
I do love Love to Love You, Baby.
We told the story about that song and
but
how.
But I also know that headspace of, I'm a devout Christian. I'm only singing about that. I'm not acting upon these feelings.
Yes, that's true.
Which is basically like the way that religion died. So anyway, finally, and now no one wanted to release this song because it was too controversial.
Really?
It was, they offered it to Diana. They offered it to Cher. They offered it to Barbra Streisand. Oh. No one was game enough to bring out this song.
Wow.
Because they thought that no one would buy it.
Wow.
And so,
how crazy.
Yeah, which is really, really interesting. And the way that the song rose to fame is because they started in the club first.
Yes.
They went, let's see how this goes.
Mm-hmm.
Playing and...
and that's basically
the
how
gays
disco
were just and the whole disco movement is what brought this song to its huge success, and it is quintessentially one of the biggest disco songs of all time.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically how disco rose to prominence as well. Is that they were giving albums to the club DJs. And they were playing it, and then people were requesting it, people were buying it.
And then once labels realized that clubs were informing the next sound, every record label was dropping tracks to the DJs.
Yeah.
The DJ at the club became one of the most powerful people in the industry for a moment.
Could you imagine them dropping? Hey, play My Sharona.
Yeah. Well, can you imagine now, like, oh, we'll just go down to the press club. Oh, can you just play My Sharona? Yeah, like, no one's doing that.
No.
All right. Well, so that's my fourth choice. My fifth and final choice. I thought I should definitely get a male in there after, like, even though I love
women.
Well,
if you have to.
And I don't know if you've heard of him. His name is Michael Jackson.
Who?
MJ.
Yes. And he had a record called Off the Wall. And on Off the Wall, he brought out a huge disco song called Dum 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 Dum. And that is called, and as was a keep on. Yeah, and then keep on. The boys don't stop till you get enough. Keep on. And the boys don't stop. Don't stop till you get enough. Oh, come on, Harmony. Anyway.
I fucking love this song.
Yeah, it's so. Now. Yeah, so Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, Michael Jackson. Amazing, right? Pre-white transition.
Well, all of his
free skin bleach.
Was.
Yes, well, yeah, truly, yeah, truly, 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 truly. Now,
what
this
year was this one again?
79. Yeah, yep. So pre-demolition.
Was it? Was it pre-July or was it post?
On July.
Oh.
Maybe this is the reason why there was a demolition. This was like the cherry on top.
Well,
which is like,
sort of,
now Michael.
He sort of took off after this.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
And I really think like this record like set him up to be just like he rocked the '80s like no yeah. one else.
And
like,
Quincy Jones produced this one, didn't he?
Let's have a look.
This is off the wall.
I thought that he.
I think he did
Thriller Onwards. I thought he was Thriller Onwards.
Well, because I know that Quincy met him on The Wiz.
The AS.
And then I thought the next album that Michael did, Quincy
Jones
produced.
Suggested himself and began working on The Wall. Off the Wall. All right.
Yeah.
So it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, Quincy yeah. produced this one.
Yeah, Quincy. And the whole thing, like this song. Is definitely timeless, like we know that.
Mm.
Incorporates all the elements that we love about disco, the synths, the string parts, the syncopated bass line, even though it's four on the floor.
Yes.
Great elements about it, right?
Mm. So
and a really great vocal performance too, by the way. Sort of thing. And what I really, really enjoy about this song is that, you know, we're all in gigging bands or whatever, and this song is just a part of the repertoire, and it still excites me to sing it, like to this day. A lot of the, actually, when I'm feeling lazy, which is, you know, 20% of the year, like there, like if I have to do Michael, I do kind of go, oh, here we go, sort of thing, because you have to really like prepare yourself for it, and that kind of stuff. But like this song, just like. I just love that it, like, because, you know, disco also, we've talked about this with hip hop, disco was also bringing out dance moves that, you know, like the hustle, all those, and Michael Jackson, this is when he started moonwalking, right?
Yeah.
So this is the whole, like, this was a movement.
Yeah, it's
like,
so good.
Like, none that I've probably seen, you know, in regards to how it just caused such a stir, you know, such a stir. And I like Off the Wall because it still has that element of the 70s, but still futuristic, like, it's still forward thinking enough and innovative. Enough, and you can transition into the 80s quite well as well. So that, and sorry, that's very music nerdy of me to say.
No, but it's good. Know, it's true.
In that way. So yeah, great, great choice. I've got a couple of honorable mentions.
Please.
Just a couple. I've already talked about The Best of My Love, The Emotions. The Boss, Diana Ross.
Yes.
My other favorite Diana track that I love. I was so right. And she sounds really good on that
now
record.
That's her
too.
Last Motown album, isn't it?
Yeah, it was like her trend, but it was like, it was that transition into the disco thing that I love. And also, I had to talk about The Village People.
Yes.
Because
yes.
The Village People are queer icons.
Yes, they are.
And YMCA and In the Navy. I've briefly talked about this before and I'll bring it up again. The Village People took, because people were so afraid to come out. Like, don't forget the 70s and 80s, especially, I don't even say, oh no, 60s was okay because like the peace and love movement came through and
you still didn't talk about it.
But it was the whole thing of like conservatism like just ruled the nation for such a long time, and people were scared to come out. People were scared.
Well, they would get killed.
They would get killed. It was,
it was against
the law to be gay, basically. And also, it was classed as a mental disease until the late 70s, early 80s, anyway.
When were the Stonewall riots? That was
Stonewall riots in the
70s. Was that in the 70s? I thought it was 69.
No, I don't think it's.
Because it's important.
Sorry, Marsha P. Johnson.
Yeah.
1969.
It is 69. Yes, yeah, and a lot of stuff happened in 69.
It was the year that Judy Garland passed away.
But also the first man on the moon. Like, it was a huge year.
Yes,
like Woodstock
happening.
Was that year. Like 69, I think, is like something like the Illuminati said. I don't know what's going on, but like it's just like this really quintessential year in regards to just the world in general.
Sure.
It was like this huge culmination of this overlong party that was the 60s. It's just
and it was almost like the 60s had to stop, and this is how we were going to do it.
It almost kind of feels like now with what's going on with COVID, people out in the streets.
That's true. Well, it's our version of it, and I think that's what people. I think that's why there's a lot of fear, because it's that thing of like we've gone through, like, you know, especially my generation, call us the resilient generation. Well, we kind of, because we went through all these, you know, huge things of like 9/11, global financial crisis, but we were too young to be affected by it.
Sure.
As opposed to, like, when you think about back in, like, you know, World War II, and your husband had to go
to war,
all you could rely on was be at home and listen to the radio. And if you were told to stay indoors, you stayed the hell indoors. You know what I mean? Like, it was a different time altogether.
Yeah, you can't really relate it to now, I think, just because.
But what's inflaming feelings is social media, for sure.
Yes.
Right. It's a whole, because there's people that are doing okay, there's people that are not doing okay. The people that are not doing okay are mad at the people that are doing okay. The people that are doing okay are like, shut the fuck up. Like, you know, like I saw this post about how, like, people are like, stop telling Melbourne people that it's going to get better or whatever. It's like, well, what else do you want people to say? Like,
you know
what I mean? Like, I get that, like, we can only have empathy. So it's that thing of like, well, I understand that you're mad, you're frustrated, you just want to get out of the house. Like, but what do you want? Like, when you're venting your feelings to your friends, what do you want your friends to say?
Yeah, right. Like, do you want us to just turn a blind eye and say nothing?
Yeah.
Or do you want some comfort?
Yeah, exactly. Like, people aren't being positive to be condescending.
Yes.
You know
right.
what I mean? It's not about that. It's about going, well, I'm not going to say, oh, well, this is shit, because we already know what's shit. So I'm going to say, well, you know what? It will get better.
Yeah, and it will.
Now, I understand that from another person's perspective, where they've been living in isolation. How did this podcast turn this way? Living in isolation and lockdown for 6 months straight.
Sure.
I can only imagine how frustrated and cooped up and left behind you feel. But you can't attack the people that are just trying to send love either.
Yeah, that's right.
That's my opinion on it. Anyway, moving on. Yeah,
I agree with that. But I think it's that thing that people are desperately feeling that, like, they're unheard.
Yes. Not
heard, and then it's like this cycle of abuse of attacking the next person for not hearing you, and they're not heard. It's just this constant cycle. And yeah, you're right, breaking out of it with empathy is kind of the only way to do it.
Absolutely. And if you feel like it's not genuine what's going to come out of your mouth, just don't say anything at all.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I think a lot of people think they have to give advice, and people just want to be heard. And then you go, I hear you. I don't understand I don't fully understand how you're feeling, because I've only had to live like 7 weeks of it compared to you, you know, sort of thing.
Sure.
But, you know, like I'm not asking for credit. I'm just saying, like, I'm not here to be condescending, but I'm not going to be negative for you either.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, exactly. Moving on.
Okay. So, the village people.
Oh yeah. So, and at the time it was just like, as we said, it was just like being gay was taboo, fire and brimstone. The church was still running the government, still is a little bit now, and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the village, and so people wanted to be the stereotypes. Gay people were too scared to be flamboyant, effeminate. And so they were like, oh, well, I need to act like the trade next door. I need to be like a fireman or a policeman, or and the village people took those toxic masculinity stereotypes and made them camp.
Yes.
And that's why that is so important, because it was like, no, it actually doesn't matter what the look is, or what, like, you either suck dick or you don't. Like, that's basically what they were saying.
Whoa.
Like, you either kiss men or you don't. Like,
I still never understood the Native American.
Yeah, me neither.
Why? I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, I didn't.
They ran out of costumes.
They either ran out of costumes, or they were trying to make a indigenous statement that didn't quite stick.
Yeah, maybe. I have no idea. Yeah,
which is its own.
I would love. I might research that separately.
I would love
to know how they chose. I mean, obviously, because there wasn't a fireman; it was a policeman,
construction worker, Comanche Indian.
Yeah, the Native American.
Native American.
Because there were five of them, weren't there? Was there one in the armed forces?
Sailor?
Yeah, I think it was the navy.
And then something else.
They did
was
the whole song in the
there
navy.
Fire? No, was there fire?
No, I don't think it was a fireman.
I can't remember.
Anyway. I digress.
Yeah, I digress as well. Yeah. But yeah, but like village people, just like, and YMCA was, and the YMCA, the Young Man Christians Association.
Yes, right.
/ the gym.
Hot, sweaty men's.
Like, I just think it's just perfect, like, rebellion with using subculture, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
So that's all my choices.
Love
amazing.
It. Beautiful.
This episode's definitely a little bit longer. I'm so sorry, guys.
That's okay. It's a great topic. I love it. And, you know, we got a little political, so.
Exactly.
Sorry, not sorry.
Alrighty.
So we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with our favorite segment.
Hey.
Hello.
Oh, my gosh. If you've been living under a rock, someone's calling me.
Uh-oh, turn it off.
Shafology 2.0, who's calling me? Someone, one of you two.
No, it's not me.
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Oh, was it Zane?
Let's do our favorite segment, shall we?
Sorry, we just got distracted. So we've been, the theme this week has been Disco the Q.
Disco.
Mm. And we've had a very lovely discussion of our playlist this week. But, you know, we've got to choose a flop. It's our favourite time. So this it's time for... It's a flop. All right, Gracie, hit us up. What's going on?
Okay, I found one of Elton John trying to make a foray into disco. Didn't take.
Yeah, I think I did.
Victim of Love.
Yes.
It's like starts with I mean, aren't we all? But it starts with like a bit of a, I'm gonna say, a lame groove. And then it comes in with what I can only assume is like an iwi, you know, like the electrical wind instrument.
Oh yeah.
Vibe.
Yeah.
It's really bad. That's my flop.
Oh my god, that's beautiful.
Can't wait to put that on the playlist. All right. Asabi.
Mine is a Rick D's tune, and if you see the oh my god, it's terrible. Disco Duck, and there's lots of quacking and what I'd call duckery instead of fuckery.
Right. So the drugs had informed this song.
Oh my god, I don't know what
they took
the
drugs
song.
Before
and during. It's terrible. It's terrible. Anyway, and all what's right. yours?
I've got one, and it's really controversial because Asabi loves these people. It's a chic. It's a chic song.
What?
And it's one freak out.
No.
Oh my god.
Freak. The chic.
We talked
freak
about
out.
This.
I totally like it. Love it. What do you?
Yeah. What do you not like about it? What's wrong with it?
Okay. It's not because of them in particular. It's because when I see an Estedford group do a disco themed number, this song gives me like it just it's trauma. It's PTSD.
Okay. Just because a bunch of little skinny white girls in too tight leotards doing things that they probably shouldn't be doing, a la sweeties, does not mean that
Look
you need
his
to.
Top, okay, guys, let's just.
Yeah.
I will let it go this time. I will let it go this time.
But also, they have a million better songs. This is just not one of them for me.
I think this one's pretty good.
And also, they did it on Glee as well.
Oh, well.
And it ruined it a little bit for me, too.
Oh.
Well, actually, it didn't, because the way they did it was because the teacher was in, he was insistent that they had to do this number, because when he was in the Geek Glee Club, it went off. Mm-hmm. But they're like, that was like 20 years ago, yeah. Mr. Shu. Like, why? And so I imagine like Lea and Michele in the wheelchair kid bumping into each other while they're doing like a piano version.
Oh my God.
Piano rehearsal of this song. So it's just a PTSD response, guys.
I really hope there's a video of that.
Yes, there will be. All right, everyone. That's my flop, and that's our playlist for the week. So
that's
thank you for tuning in, everyone. The theme was disco. We can't wait to party with you all week long.
Yeah.
We have Asabi Goodman.
Hey.
Gracie Mac.
Hello.
My name's Josh DeVetta. Thank you for tuning in and coming to the lab with us, and we will see you next week. All right, have a lovely time.
Can a song just objectively be bad?
Yes.
But that doesn't mean we can't learn from it. I'm Alex Smith.
And I'm James Keogh.
And on our new podcast, My Songs Suck, we talk to writers and musicians who share with us some of their earlier, less good content and reflect on how far they've come.
If you want to get in on the fun, head to That's Not Canon Productions or find us on iTunes, Google Play, or whatever podcatcher you use.
My Songs Suck, because everyone makes mistakes.
Just make sure you record them.
That's Not Canon Productions podcast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.